morning on 2FM.
2FM.
And there you go. That is, of course, Glen Campbell. And that is, of course, Wichita Lineman. Or the Wichita Lineman, I should say. And we're looking here at the Dylan Jones book, just about that song, where he searches in the sun for the world's greatest unfinished song. Where do we start? Let's take a look at this. Okay, we're talking Glen Campbell and we're talking Jimmy Webb. Dylan, how are you?
Good, I'm all right.
Tell me about like both of them, Glen Campbell and Jimmy Webb, first of all.
Well, Jimmy Webb, as well as writing Wichita Lineman, also wrote By the Time I Get to Phoenix. He wrote Galveston. He wrote MacArthur Park. He wrote some of the greatest songs of the late 60s. And Glen Campbell had a hit with many of those songs, even though his most popular song was probably a song called Rhinestone Cowboy, which happened in the mid-70s. But together, they were a great pair and they were fantastic collaborators.
Okay, and Jimmy Webb's background goes back to Motown, and like it goes right back, well before any MacArthur Park or any Donna Summer Disco 78 hit or anything like that. The song that we're talking about here is a song that has enduring power. Just tell me a little bit about when it came out first. Was it hailed as a classic the minute it came out?
No, it came out in 1968, and it was a hit. But the thing about music of that time, if we look back now and we think of the 60s and we frame the 60s now, we think of the counterculture. All the big records of the late 60s are big countercultural records, and they're very important. And they were very seismic at the time, and they chimed with the zeitgeist. But actually, real mainstream pop culture was the likes of Frank Sinatra, and it was Sergio Mendes and Glen Campbell. And this was a really big hit of the time, but it's not particularly significant in terms of what was happening in politics or in counterculture at the time. It was just a very, very successful pop song.
Yeah, but don't forget, like also in 68, there was everything from, you know, Yummy, 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 I Got Love in My Tummy, or Classical Gas, or I Say a Little Prayer. Yeah. And there was also The Mighty Quinn and Green Tambourine. I've got some over here. Look, I heard it through the grapevine. How about Hey Jude, Mrs. Robinson, Born to Be Wild? There was an awful lot going on. So maybe people had just got their ears elsewhere and it took a bit of time. You do call this the first existential country song. Wow, what a claim. What does that mean exactly?
I think it means that most country and western before then was rather more formulaic, and actually, even though this has a very simple narrative about a telephone repairman who's halfway up a telegraph pole in the middle of Oklahoma, and he can hear what he thinks is the voice of his ex-girlfriend down the telephone line, it opens up this huge vista, both in terms of the orchestral suite, the arrangement, and the narrative of the music, to allow us almost to create our own sort of narrative. Yeah. It's a, even though it's a very small song in some respects, it is borderless in other ways, just because it's so monumental.
Right, by the way, we are talking to Dylan Jones about the Wichita Lineman, his new book, Searching in the Sun for the World's Greatest Unfinished Song. Is it true that Jimmy Webb sent it to Glen Campbell? He said, great, he recorded it immediately, and Jimmy Webb, hold on, I'm not finished.
Yeah, Glen Campbell had been trying to have a hit for quite some time. He was already one of LA's best session musicians. He was the LA version of Jimmy Page, and he played on lots of songs from the Monkees, Sonny and Cher, the Beach Boys, Phil Spector records. But he wanted to be successful in his own right. He wanted to be a singer. And he tried for years, about 4 or 5 years, and then he had a hit with a song that Jimmy Webb had originally written when he was a staff writer at Motown. This was By the Time I Get to Phoenix, and this was a big hit for Glen Campbell. And Glen Campbell did what I think is an incredibly sensible thing. He basically called up Jimmy Webb and said, can you write me another song about a place?
Yeah.
And so Jimmy Webb spent 3 hours at his home in the Hollywood Hills on an old piano that had been painted green by his housemates, and he got sort of 4/5 of the way there. And because he kept being pestered by Glen Campbell on the phone, he eventually put the reel to reel in a package and sent it round to where he was recording.
Do you know, can I write a song about a place? I mean, it really is a very good move to write a song about a place. It's like Slade writing a song about Christmas. They keep getting a million every year because of it. I mean, if you think about it, like you mentioned Galveston by the time I get to Phoenix. But like even the name, I mean, especially to us over in this part of the world, and I go with the UK and Ireland for this, Wichita. I mean, it's just perfect, isn't it?
Well, it's very evocative, and and we always think that American town and city names have more romance about them, and they do. But American songwriters knew this, and when they were eulogizing the virtues of California or writing about the urban sensory experience of New York, or indeed the barren wastelands of the Midwest, they knew exactly what they were evoking by talking about New York and LA and Wichita and Houston and Phoenix and all these places, which to people who hadn't been to them were very, very romantic.
Exactly. Yeah. Just as a matter of interest, though, was he fixing the wrong kind of wire? I mean, well,
it's interesting that you should pick up on that, because Jimmy Webb said when I eventually got to meet him, he said that occasionally through the years he's been taken to task by various union members who say that he has indeed got his wires crossed because he was conflating the ideas of electricity wire and telephone wire.
Right. A high tension line can experience an overload, but not a telephone line. And as he says himself, yeah, try telling that to the union or whatever he says. Anyway, like the unusual chord progression, to be honest, like that's what you say. Is it an unusual chord progression? Am I missing something?
It's a very complex song. And even though it's unfinished and even though it has very few lyrics, in terms of its orchestration, in terms of its the variety of changes in the song, it's almost like a Burt Bacharach song, because I think that obviously people call Burt Bacharach's music, they call Jimmy Webb's music easy listening, but particularly Burt Bacharach's arrangements were incredibly complex and they're very convoluted, and actually they weren't easy listening at all.
Do you know, funny thing is, it's so cinematic. Are you surprised there hasn't been a movie, as so many songs have had a movie after, called The Wichita Lineman?
I think you're right, and that's the word. It is cinematic. When you hear the strings, when you hear Glen Campbell come in with that extraordinary voice, a whole vista opens up in front of you.
And also the connection between Jimmy Webb and Glen Campbell. They have this other connection too. They grew up not too far away from each other, but certainly, you know, by American road standards.
Yeah, they both grew up very close to each other, a couple of hundred miles apart in the Midwest. And actually, if you scripted this in a Richard Curtis film, you would laugh because it sounds so ridiculous. But one day, Jimmy Webb is on his father's tractor, and he hears a song, a minor hit, a local hit by Glen Campbell on the radio. And the transistor radio in his father's tractor. And he was already playing piano. He was already starting to write songs. And he would have been about 14 or 15 at the time. And he actually said to himself, and he repeats this to this day, if I could one day write a song that would be good enough to be covered by Glen Campbell, I would die a happy man. And then 5 years later, he made it happen.
Wow. Can you place the influence of this song on American culture, or is that too big a question?
Well, the thing is, it's weird because in some respects it hasn't had a huge influence. And actually, people talk about influence in a really odd way because they say David Bowie was influential. No, he wasn't. He made extraordinary records. Bands like Bad Company were probably far more inspirational because so many bands try to copy Bad Company or Free or The Clash, etc., etc., etc. So it didn't have a huge impact culturally, but in terms of its sort of currency with individuals, I think that's where it's important. And I spoke to lots of songwriters and lots of broadcasters, lots of journalists who have carried this song with them for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years because people have a very personal relationship with it.
Right, but at the same time, if it's near mythical status now, is deserved, an invincible classic, etc., and all these things. Jimmy Webb, am I right in saying he said it was just another song?
Yeah, I think when you're a songwriter and you spend all day, all week, all month, all year writing songs, it's like an extended family. They're all your babies, and you can't really love one more than the other.
Yeah, indeed, absolutely. And also, what was happening in music at the time, and was this significant about this song, and a few others maybe, were the boundaries between pop and country and rock, were they being stretched in 1968?
Well, I don't think by other people, but they certainly were by him. I mean, Bobby Gentry, other people, Elvis, Lee Hazelwood, various other people who were kind of mixing and matching, like Johnny Cash. But I think that Wichita Lineman is a very particular song, and I don't think it's particularly a great example of any one particular genre, because it's so particular. It's a very idiosyncratic record.
You saw Glen Campbell playing live at the Festival Hall about 10 years ago. Tell me about that.
Oh, he was amazing. And the thing about Glen Campbell as a performer is the fact that he completely understands why people come to see him. They came to see him because they wanted to hear the hits. And they wanted to hear the hits the way they sounded on the record. And actually, we all did. And it was an extraordinary concert. And when he actually played Wichita Lineman, it was a sublime moment, because it's one of those things where he's playing it. It sounds like the record. It doesn't sound like a karaoke version of it. It doesn't sound like an abstract version of it. It sounded like a really fulsome live version of the record. And that was fantastic.
By the way, and I need you more than want you, and I want you for all time. Do you want to parse that for us, or explain that, exactly where his head is at?
Well, I think they're probably the greatest love song lyrics ever written. I think you could say that the opening to God Only Knows by Brian Wilson rivals it. I may not always love you, etc., etc., etc. But to say I need you more than want you, and I want you for all time, that's devotion, and it's probably unrequited devotion too.
Okay, well, finally then, the Wichita Lineman is what we're looking at. An excellent, so it's amazing how much time you've got. Where did you get the idea? Did you say I could write a long book about this?
Yeah, I wrote a big book about David Bowie a few years ago, and unusually it was successful. And my agent at the time said, "What are you going to do next?" And I said, "Well, actually, what I really want to do is write a book about Wichita Lineman." And he was American. He said, "Dylan, that's a really bad idea." And then Ed Victor, my agent, sadly died, and I got a new agent, a guy called Johnny Geller. And he said, "You've had this big hit. What are you going to do for a follow-up?" And I said, "I want to write a book about Wichita Lineman." And again, he said, "That's a really bad idea." But that's the book I wanted to write. And I spoke to Faber, and thankfully they went for it.
Well, it's a great story that you've, you know, if you like, weaved all around the song itself.
But, thank you, Dave.
When you say Dylan, as in Dylan Jones, as in you, what about the other Dylan? He said this is the greatest song ever.
Well, man's got taste.
Yeah, the man's got taste indeed. Well, listen, the final question to you, Dylan, is this. The song's enduring power, I mean, it's near mythical status, as I mentioned earlier on. Is there something, do you think, about the loneliness, forget the cinematic for a second, the loneliness of the lyrics, that there's something about it that everybody can connect with?
Yeah, and also, I remember when I was young, when I was a teenager, and I, as I say, I've loved this record for 50 years, and that was the record I played when I wanted to feel sad. When I wanted to feel alone, or I wanted to sort of go off somewhere, for me it was like being in a library. It was like being in church. And I think you're right. It has that connection, because we feel lonely. It takes us somewhere that perhaps might not be the nicest place to be, but it's the safest.
Right, indeed. And by the way, who's that on the cover? Who's the guy on the Telegraph pole?
He's a man who probably doesn't realise he's on the cover of a book, Dave.
Brilliant. Dylan, listen, thank you so much once again for talking to us on the programme. Dylan Jones, it is. Searching in the Sun for the World's Greatest Unfinished Song is the subtitle. The Wichita Lineman is the book. A must read. Thanks a million, Dylan.
Dave Fanning on 2FM. 2FM.